Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost conservative populist radio program. April is Confederate Heritage and History Month, and here at the Political Cesspool, we're doing our part to bring you the best guests and interviews to raise the public's awareness. Stand by now for another great installment of the Political Cesspool, and here's your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everyone, to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio program. And as we've been promoting on the website and on this very show, the third and final hour of each broadcast this month is our yearly tribute to Confederate History Month. We try to do our part to keep the rich cultural heritage of the Old South alive on this program every year, but particularly during this month. And we of course know that it's important to pay attention to the things that are going on currently, different issues that are out there on the political spectrum, but we believe equally important it is to remember our heroes and heritage, and none is more rich than that of the Confederacy. And with that being said, I'd like to welcome our final guest of the evening, Steve McIntyre, an unofficial Nathan Bedford Forrest historian, a good friend of ours, and in fact a dead ringer for the general himself. He does reenactments in which he portrays Nathan Bedford Forrest all over the South, and business is good this year, is it not, Steve?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's good to have you, Steve. How's it been going this Confederate History Month?
Well, it's apparently going pretty well, and as long as people like you give us a little positive publicity, and I want to thank you for that as well, and all that you do with your show. It is a real service to our community, and I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I'm sure they wish they could revoke it now, but this show did, in fact, receive from the Memphis City Council themselves a certificate of appreciation for outstanding contributions to the community, and in fact, I was named an honorary Memphis City Councilman, and that all happened around the time of the very infamous fights that surrounded our Confederate parks here in Memphis back in 2005 and 2006. Of course, you'll remember that well, Steve. We were just talking with Frank Borzilleri, a professor, author, and former member of the New York City School Board, about the really savage attempts that there are out there to strike the record of all of the true heroes of American history, Nathan Bedford Forrest being among them. And we were both engaged in that, Steve, you and me and many others, in the fight to preserve those Confederate parks, one of them being Nathan Bedford Forrest Park itself, the beautiful park right down there in downtown Memphis, which has the great equestrian statue and is the home to the general's grave. It's his gravesite, and the cultural Marxists came in, wanted to basically tear it down and move it, and we didn't allow that to happen. Do you think that we can expect those type of attacks to accelerate in the future?
Well, I don't think that the attacks will ever stop. I know you may be aware that very recently the park received National Historic status. And so it's a National Historic Landmark now. It's going to be much more difficult in the future for enemies of Forrest to make a case to change the name of that park or move that statue. I don't know that, at least now, it was ever really that serious an effort or had that much chance to succeed. But in the future, it's going to be much more difficult for that to happen. I think they're going to attack. They're going to continue to attack the park and Forrest. And I guess if things continue as they are, there'll be a day when there won't be anyone like us around, James, to defend it.
Well, God forbid that.
That's a sad. That's a sad commentary on the way the country's going. But but hopefully maybe we can pull this thing out. As long as people like you are out there fighting the good fight, I think we can hang in there.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Steve, but certainly give credit where credit's due. There would be no show like this if it wasn't for the listeners and people like you who support it. And I'm thankful for you, probably much more than you're thankful for me. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. But
let's talk
about Forrest itself. I brought up the situation with the equestrian monument there, the beautiful. Listen, folks, Google Nathan Bedford Forrest statue in Memphis. Get a load of this thing. Beautiful. Oh, man. And I'm going to tell you why I wanted to invoke that into the broadcast in a few minutes after we talk a little bit about Nathan Bedford Forrest's life. Now, as I said, Steve, we do our part here on the show every year to talk about Confederate History Month and memorialize it. But truly, if we were charged with doing this show every day, 365 days a year, and the only thing we could do in each show was to profile a different Confederate hero, we wouldn't get anywhere. There was just so many, and so many incredible stories of sacrifice and bravery that those men possessed. But, you know, being here in Memphis, and Forrest was a native Tennessean and a Memphian, we got to pay a little more attention to him, and certainly we do that every year. But getting back to the beginning of it all, of course, Nathan Bedford Forrest, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, Steve. I'm going to give a really brief look into his life. It's really the stuff of myth and legend, but it's 100% true.
Absolutely. That's what makes it so amazing.
To just severe poverty in Middle Tennessee. No education, no formal education, born into poverty, yet he rises to become, at the time, a self-made millionaire, just an ingenious businessman. He became fabulously rich. That in and of itself is an incredible story worthy of movies. And certainly they've made movies documenting people that accomplished much less. But now picture that. Take that. A man born into squalor, becoming a self-made millionaire without the benefits of an education. Then take that millionaire and have him enlist as a private, a soldier of the lowest rank in an army. And that's what Nathan Bedford Forrest did. Then, after having used much of his money to outfit the Confederate troops, joining as a private. Could you imagine a millionaire in today's society joining the army as a obscure private? Then, with no military training, becoming perhaps the most studied and most legendary general in the history of warfare. His tactics are still studied today. That was Nathan Bedford Forrest in a nutshell. Am I wrong on any of those facts, Steve?
No, that is correct, and it is an amazing story. Again, if it weren't true, it would sound like some kind of Hollywood fairy tale. But it's all true, and that's why he's admired still to this day by people who love the South, and people who understand and love heroism in general. Know the character of the man and what he represented, and that's the real amazing thing. After all these years, he is not in any way forgotten, and in some ways, I think maybe he's become more appreciated.
As each day passes, he becomes more appreciated by me. I don't mean to sound repetitive, but just let that sink in, ladies and gentlemen. Born impoverished, no education, rising to become a self-made millionaire, investing your money to outfit troops, then enlisting in that army as a private, and then with no military training, becoming a general who they say his blitzkrieg tactics were copied by the Germans. I mean, they were famous for their assaults. They say
still studied at West Point today.
Still at West Point today.
Right. And like you say, his enlistment into the army. See, he and his brothers and his son went together and enlisted here in Memphis into the Confederate Army, or at least into the Tennessee troops as a private. And that's really more all he had to done is write a letter to his friend, the governor of the state of Tennessee, Isham Harris, who would have given him any kind of rank that he wanted, probably. But it's a testimony. to his humility.
Character. Yeah, character.
That he joined to the prophet. He didn't expect anything. He didn't go in expecting any particular or special favors just because who he was. That would be rare then, and obviously it would be extremely rare today for a man of his stature, public stature, to have assumed that type of humility.
Hey, Steve, sit tight. More to come on Nathan Mitchell for us right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. When the truth is found to be. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone, as we celebrate, quite possibly, my biggest hero, Nathan Bedford Forrest, and it's always an honor to be able to do this at least once a year. Actually, we celebrate Forrest twice a year, maybe three times, though, always during Confederate History Month, always on his birthday, and sometimes on the anniversary of his death, although that's a little more somber occasion. But continuing on with Nathan Bedford Forrest, historian Steve McIntyre, and Steve, we were talking a little bit about Forrest's birth and some of the things he did, just the incredible accomplishments and sacrifices that man made. It's really something that's unparalleled for any time, although back in that day, men were more likely to be honorable and noble. You made
Absolutely.
Mention of Tennessee Governor Isham Harris, who was the governor of Tennessee back during the War of Northern Aggression. This was a guy. Now, could you imagine this? Governor Isham Harris actually engaged at Shiloh. This is a sitting governor fighting in one of the most storied battles of that war, and the anniversary of Shiloh was just last weekend. I mean, that could you imagine
That's
what
right.
some bad coward governors in this day and age going out and fighting in a battle for their
That's
people
exactly
for their
right.
state?
Harris actually acted as an aide to Albert Sidney Johnston, who, of course, was the general who was commanding the troops, the Confederate troops at Shiloh.
Do you think if they refought Shiloh today,
there,
Phil Bredesen would be in the trenches?
I can't see that happening. I really can't, James. I'd say that he'd be as far away from the trenches as he could possibly get.
And that's all of them. I mean, you know, again, we always ask the rhetorical question, what happened to the culture that used to produce men like that? The governor of
that's
Tennessee
right.
fighting in the Battle of Shiloh, gun in hand.
And you're exactly right, James. And I said, you know, the problem is we'll never see another leader like Forrest or like Lee, those types of leaders, because they're not going to have the types of followers that they had, if you see what I mean. They were great, not just in themselves, because they were, but there were great men who followed them, you know. And today, I don't know if we have that kind of character anymore.
Well, there's not
to follow
many
men
that
like
do.
Forrest into the battle, into the fray, and fight the good fight the way they did. The way our ancestors did. They were all heroes, as far as I'm concerned.
They were, and that's what I'm saying. You know,
and God gave them great leaders, like Forrest.
You know,
yes, you did. And
I think that's
you're right. They
were
all heroes.
Today. We're lacking the leaders and the followers.
You're right. We do. And
but they're emerging. We've got guys like you, James, that are still carrying the flag forward.
Well, that flag will be carried until God Himself calls me home. I promise you that. But as we're talking about Shiloh, Steve, I'd like to ask you, and I know I've done it before on this program, and you're quite good at it, if you can, share with us the story of Fallen Timbers. Now, keep in mind, this was the story of Fallen Timbers was actually a skirmish that took place as the Confederates were retreating from Shiloh. But
That's
tell
right.
the folks listening around the country and around the world tonight what Nathan Bedford Forrest did during the Battles of Falling Timbers, keeping into mind what a big target he made, a very imposing man,
Absolutely.
Very big man, very tall man.
Well, as you know, at Shiloh, the Confederate Army had completely routed the Union troops on the first day. Forrest participated in that, you know, his cavalry troops participated throughout the battle, of course. And in fact, the night after that first day, Forrest scouted the Union lines and came back and reported to General Beauregard, who had taken over after Albert Sidney Johnston had died that day in the battle, reported to him that the Union was receiving fresh troops. It would be best if they could go ahead and press the attack that night, which Beauregard disregarded Forrest's suggestion. Of course, if they had done that, night fighting at that time was not that common, obviously, but it could have been done. They could have gone ahead and pressed the Union troops into the Tennessee River, and that would have been the end of it. But anyway, the second day, the Confederacy had to withdraw as new, fresh Union troops arrived to reinforce the Union lines, and Forrest was asked to cover the retreat. And at Fallen Timbers, as you said, Forrest made a stand to cover that retreat, give the Confederate troops time to get back to Corinth, Mississippi. And Forrest intended to lead a charge into a body of Union troops there, who were pursuing, and called for a charge. And this is an amazing thing too. And his position, of course, was not a general at that time. He was still a colonel. Led the charge, or what would have been a charge, only to find out that none of his men followed him into the charge. And so before he knew it, he was surrounded by the Yankee soldiers and was actually shot in the side, which actually lifted him, that the shot was so close. In fact, the rifle was pressed almost up into it, against him, and lifted him up off the saddle. So here the man is now wounded. He reaches down, grabs a Union soldier by the scruff of the neck, by the front of the shirt collar, his jacket, lifts the man onto the back of his saddle to cover his own retreat, use him kind of as a human shield, if you will, gets back to his lines, drops the man off, and rides off with the rest of his troops.
I mean, you know, you
unbelievable, could, superhuman effort. Again, if it weren't true, you'd think it was some kind of a made-up Hollywood story.
Well, I was going to say, Steve, the most creative Hollywood.
They don't cry. To get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Back to the show as we continue to discuss and examine the life and times of Nathan Bedford Forrest in this, our Confederate History Month segment for this week's show. I guess one of the reasons I'm so excited and elated to be able to host this program and to have been able to host this show for the past, coming up 5 years this fall, is the fact that I know that as long as we're out there, the voice of the popular majority here in the South will not be completely squelched. Until they eradicate us, they're never going to have a complete monopoly on thought, and it's just such an honor to be able to have the airwaves and pay tribute to such a man as Nathan Bedford Forrest. Steve, I'm going to turn it over to Eddie Miller to ask you a question, but before I do, I'd like to ask you, again, despite our best efforts, we're just not going to be able to make a dent in the legacy of Forrest in the time we have allotted tonight. But what's one story or one fact about Forrest that you'd like to bring to the audience's attention that perhaps I haven't asked yet?
Well, I'll tell you, I think what's really interesting about Forrest and during the war is the interest that people had in him. You know, early on, the people of Memphis knew exactly who Forrest was. And the newspapers would follow his exploits, almost in the way that, you know, maybe you follow your favorite sports team or something. I know it might be a bad analogy, but that's how important, you know, the war was to everyone that are, and how Forrest was doing. And as the war, went on, and the South, of course, early on experienced some early, successes, some early defeats, but as the war went on and as things started to look more and more grim and the Union soldiers, Union troops, the invasion began to creep farther and farther south, Forrest's exploits were some of the only positive news that the Southerners would get about the war. And so they followed his exploits very closely. And I think that's an interesting fact to follow, is how even during the time of the war, it wasn't after the war that he became famous. He was very famous during the war for the things that he did, and of course, people of the South were very proud of him, proud of his accomplishments during the war, and of course, after the war, his fame only grew more and more.
And he was quite accomplished after
and
the war.
I just kind of like to bring that out. So people understand that Forrest wasn't like a phenomenon that was built up, or you know, his fame wasn't made after the war based on the memories of his old soldiers. He was very much famous during the war for the things that he did. Gave people a lot of positive reinforcement and something to cheer about. Sometimes when there wasn't much to cheer about.
Well, and as revered and respected as he was by those for whom he fought, he was hated equally as much by his enemies, by our enemies. What was it that Sherman said about Nathan Bedford Forrest? Of course, Sherman, the father of the slash and burn, carpet bombing, kill the men, women, and children, just absolute despicable warfare. What was it that William Sherman said about Forrest?
Well, I don't know. It's specific. He called Forrest. He always refer to Forrest as that devil Forrest. For one thing.
Yeah, I think that he did. If I'm not mistaken, Steve, I'm pretty sure it was Sherman that said he would deplete the Union treasury if he could, if it would get him Forrest. Yeah. And, if, you know, talk about the honor of Forrest. This is a guy, Forrest had to go and stand trial against Sherman after the war for fighting for his country.
Right.
But, Eddie, right. I know you have some questions to ask of Steve.
Well, you know, I was just going to ask Steve if he's all familiar with the case, with the one exploit that Forrest did. He rode into one of the hotels in Memphis after a Yankee general and the Yankee
actually, general. That was during the raid, the Memphis raid. It was actually his brother, Bill, who rode into the Gayoso Hotel. Exactly. And during the raid, Forrest was Nathan Bedford Forrest was present during the raid, but he sent his men out in several different groups to accomplish different things. One thing they were trying to do is capture three Union generals that were here in town, and that was General Washburn that Bill Forrest was after. And of course, Washburn escaped out the window in his night clothes, or basically his underwear, if you will, and they captured his uniform. Another group went to free the prisoners at the Irving Block Prison downtown, a notorious prison, very much a kind of a concentration camp, if you will, where hundreds of civilians died in the terrible conditions there. So that was one of their goals and objectives during that raid. But it was the Memphis raid was an amazing thing. It didn't accomplish everything Forrest wanted to, but it certainly did shake up the Yankees. And they say that as far as telegraph messages went, as far as Chicago. Chicago, Illinois, warning that Forrest was heading north and alerting people as far north as Chicago. That's the kind of fear and respect that he commanded from the Yankees.
Rightfully so.
Hey, you know, Ed, we were talking before about just the completely politically correct version of history that is now taught about Forrest, whereas tonight we're trying to set the record straight about some of the truths that surrounded him. But I know along those lines you had another question for Steve, Ed.
Yeah, we probably hadn't brought up, you know, you're talking about how wonderful, how great a general he was. I think, you know, what Sherman said about him, I believe, Steve probably know this, I think General Robert E. Lee himself said that, you know, General Forrest is probably the best general of the whole war, including himself.
Actually,
as I understand, after the war, he was asked who he thought had accomplished the most had achieved the greatest success for the South during the war. And he said, as a man, reportedly said, a man he had never had the opportunity to meet himself, and that was General Nathan Bedford Forrest, who fought in the Western Theater. Lee was very aware of him. Of course, Davis was one of Forrest's best friends after the war. During the war, Davis, receiving bad information from his subordinates and from the other generals, particularly here in the Western Theater, never, I think, realized until at the very end of the war what Forrest was accomplishing, and so never fully appreciated him until it was really too late. But after the war, Davis and Forrest were great friends. And, of course, Davis attended Forrest's funeral.
What was the greatest, do you have any idea, what was the greatest number of troops that Forrest ever had at his at hand?
Because they were always outnumbered.
Yeah, never had, probably, under his direct command, he never had more than, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 maximum.
Damn. Could you just imagine what he could accomplish if he'd had anything, like some of the Yankee generals have. He had 50, 60, 70,000 men under his command. I mean,
I tell you, that's a thing that's debated a lot. And of course, it's impossible to know exactly what might have happened. But even if on the occasions where Forrest had an opportunity to at least give his opinion on what needed to be done. I know a lot of things could have changed. Certainly there at Shiloh that we already talked about, early on at Fort Donelson, where he urged the generals there to withdraw with that, you know, rather than surrender or at least fight. You know, there's no telling what might have happened there if Forrest's advice had been followed. Now, what could he have done if he'd had more troops under his direct command? I think personally he could have done a great deal. He paid such attention to detail, such attention to the condition of his troops and equipment, and he expected everyone, all of his subordinates, absolute obedience and absolute commitment to his orders. And I'll tell you, it could have made a huge difference. I guess it's amazing that he was able to command as much attention as he did, and get considering his background as we've already discussed.
Hey, hang on one more second, Steve. We're going to wrap this up about an 8 minutes before us after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, the final segment of tonight's riveting and enthralling installment of the Political Cesspool Radio program. We've covered a lot of ground and finishing it up tonight with a little more examining of Nathan Bedford Forrest, General Nathan Bedford Forrest. Our guest has been and continues to be Steve McIntyre, James Edwards and Eddie Miller in studio with you. Steve, some final questions as we wrap up this segment and, in fact, the show this evening. Could you recommend any good books for those who have enjoyed our presentation on Forrest tonight and perhaps want to learn a little bit more about him on their own time? What's a good book that you would recommend for them to check out?
I'll tell you, James, my favorite book on Forrest, far and away, is a book by Andrew Lytle, who was one of the 12 Southerners who wrote the essays in a book called I'll Take My Stand, and I recommend that book highly as well. But for a book on Forrest, Andrew Lytle wrote a book in the 1930s called Nathan Bedford Forrest and His Critter Company. And it's very informative, but more as important, it's very entertaining. Lytle, of course, is a big Forrest fan, and he was a great writer. And just does a marvelous job of covering the life and times from his childhood on through till the end of the war and after. And so if you want to get just a good general idea of Forrest and his life and his exploits, told by a very good storyteller, it's Nathan Bedford Forrest and His Critter Company by Andrew Lytle. I recommend it highly.
Well, there you have it, folks, for the 50 or 60 Americans that still read in this day and age. I know it's old school to check out a book, but...
You bring them that many?
Well, there's three of them right here, so I don't know. But, check out that book. And I know, Eddie, you were bringing up during the break what more can be done to educate folks about the true history of one of America's greatest heroes, Nathan Bedford Forrest. And, of course, Steve... You do much more than make yearly appearances on this program to talk about Forrest. You do it in your daily life as well. Give some examples to our listening audience how you bring the history of Forrest to life, really on a daily basis.
Well, I tell you, of course, I meet people all the time who will come up to me and say, you know, you look like a Confederate general. They'll even recognize that I look like Forrest. And of course, that always is a hoot, you know, when people come up and actually ask you, you know, do you know you look a little bit like Nathan Bedford Forrest. But yeah, every day, you know, you just kind of have to live your beliefs, you know, and stand up for the guy at every chance that you get, you know, if you hear him attacked and so forth and so on. But I do a lot of speaking at Sons of Confederate Veterans meetings. I've actually done, living history presentations at schools and at churches and for, Nathan Bedford Forrest birthday celebrations and so forth and so on. Confederate history celebrations, History Month celebrations. The main thing is, just on a daily basis, teach your family, you know, let them know what it's about. Anybody you come in contact with, let them know the truth about these things. The most fun I guess I ever had, the greatest honor I ever had, was I got to here in Memphis in 2002, the national reunion of the Sons of Confederate Veterans was held here in Memphis at the Peabody Hotel, and we actually, at the opening ceremonies, myself and about seven or eight other cavalry troopers actually rode our horses into the grand ballroom of the Peabody Hotel.
Man.
And of course that was billed as the first time horses had been ridden into a hotel in Memphis since the Forrest raid. And it was a lot of fun. So I've done a lot of neat things portraying the general over the years.
Well, and he is a dead ringer. I've had the opportunity to work with Steve on a few projects, and of course I have the honor of being his friend. And I tell you, you got to find a picture of this guy. And while you're at it, do a little homework. Find that inscription, ladies and gentlemen, on etched on Nathan Bedford Forrest's tomb here in Memphis, and read about it. I think it sums up General Forrest to a T. And remember how important it is to keep the legacy of our heroes alive, and that's something that Steve McIntyre does, and we're all better off for it. And Steve, thanks so much for shedding a little light on the truth behind Nathan Bedford Forrest throughout the last hour on this program. Already looking forward to the next time you're on this show, which will probably be in July, because of course there is the annual Nathan Bedford Forrest birthday celebration that takes place at Memphis's downtown Forest Park every July, and we'll talk more about that when the time comes closer. But Steve, final question before we run out of time. In doing all of these living history presentations and speeches and personal appearances in which you portray Forrest, obviously the media would report one thing, but what's the truth? What is the truth when it comes to how people receive you during these appearances?
I'll tell you, I have never... I've met all kinds of people and been in all kinds of situations, and all the time that I've portrayed Forrest, I've never had a negative reception. People always very happy to experience this portrayal of Forrest, and even people who are not necessarily friends of the South still can appreciate, you know, the historical significance and get a lot out of it. And so I've had lots of positive feedback. The media, I have found, will just generally ignore you. They don't want to give any positive spin at all on our history, on Confederate history, the history of Forrest. They want it all to be negative. So they basically will just steer clear. But the just regular people that you meet every day are quite interested and quite receptive. So that's always been a positive thing to me.
Well, Steve, I've saved the best for last year, and this is the honest to God's truth. May God strike me dead with the lightning bolt if I'm not lying, but even exaggerating. 2 weeks ago, my wife and I moved out of our home. We're in the process of moving right now to another place in Memphis. And the people that were renting out our previous home were moving in, and I noticed that the guy was bringing in a lot of Confederate books about the Confederacy. We got into a conversation. Obviously, that's something that we shared in common. And he was telling me a story about how his young son was able to meet a guy who was playing Nathan Bedford Forrest. And, in fact, he got a picture with him. And wouldn't you know who it was?
What do you know?
I mean, what are the odds of that? A guy moving into the home that I lived in had a son who got a picture with you at one of these appearances. And I know people do that with you all the time. But it was just, and I had just had lunch with you the week before. So it was just, you know, it's just one of those things, one of those quirks of life that keeps the whole thing interesting. But
well, that's great.
But
you never know.
So that's one person that appreciated you.
Yep. You never know who you're going to affect or you know. What effect that's going to have on folks. And I like I said, I always find it's generally positive. I can't tell you how many people, you know, bring their kids up and want to have their kids' picture taken with me and so forth and so on. It's quite an honor, and it's very humbling, you know. I mean, people will actually treat you as if you were the general, you know, and that's quite a humbling thing. And I never take it for granted, believe me. I want to portray the general in the most positive light possible and in a truthful light.
Well, and it's not just that.
So
I'm glad that
message gets out.
It's not just a personal honor. It's the fact that they're honoring Forrest, because I guarantee
that's
you,
it. That's exactly
I would never,
right.
I would never let my kid get a picture with the Abraham Lincoln reenactor. You know what I'm saying?
Amen, brother.
Well, Steve, God bless you, and have a great rest of the Confederate History Month. I know you got a lot of appearances forthcoming, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it very much.
Steve McIntyre, everybody. Have a good night, my friend. Well, Eddie, that wraps up another show far too quickly, I might add, but thanks for coming in and spelling Winston for the last hour and a half. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed working with you. It's always an honor.
I enjoyed the heck out of it. You know, just one last statement, James. I'm 62 years old now, and when I came up, and when I was in grammar school and junior high school, all the people that I went to school with, everybody in Memphis was very aware of their Southern heritage, even the teachers. And we really honored Nathan Bedford Forrest. And it was just a common thing. We all identified ourselves, considered ourselves as Confederates.
Well, I just had to throw
that in there. That's how much time, that's the how much change I've seen in my lifetime where, you know, now you would never see a teacher give any honor to any Southern.
Well, general. That's the way it is now, but surely as it's changed for the worse, hope still springs eternal that we can change it back for the better, and that's why we continue to fight on this program. And thank you, Eddie, for being there with me and being such a great mentor and hero to all of us. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.